You're listening to Language Nerds Do Earth, the podcast about linguistics, culture, travel, and how they're all connected. Now, it's time for your language nerd hosts. One in China, one in Spain. It's Patrice and Rachel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Patrice.
And I'm Rachel.
And welcome to Language Nerds Do Earth, our second episode.
So great to have you guys back. And for those of you who are just listening for the first time, welcome.
Mm-hmm. And we probably sound a little better than we did last week. I think we both had a bit of a head cold.
A little bit, yeah. So I think this week is going to be better.
Clear as day.
Yeah. Okay, so to start off today's episode, we're going to talk about a really interesting article that we found about a guy who lives in the UK, and he has traveled to 127 countries.
And all 50 states.
And all 50 states, that's it.
And he's blind and deaf.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No. He's Helen Kellering it all around the world.
To me, one of the most interesting parts was he does a lot of things that are very adventurous, like whitewater rafting, like
bungee jumping.
Yeah. I won't even do that now.
And I know. I think he said he's been bungee jumping like 5 times.
Something crazy. And I mean, I love whitewater rafting, but I also can see perfectly well and I know what's coming.
Right, right. So he has family members help him book the tickets, but otherwise he just goes to these countries by himself. So he said he'll ask locals for help.
I think what I understood is he's not totally blind or deaf, but mostly. Right? So like he uses the app that is text to speech. So I guess that's how he understands things.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And so he experiences the world by feel, basically. He said at some point, I experience monuments by climbing them. I've gone up the Eiffel Tower. I've gone up the Statue of Liberty. I experience cities by walking them. I focus on changing in gradient and surface under my feet and cobblestone, marble. And, you know, at some point he said, I was sitting on a glacier and I pet like a penguin next to me and I felt the cold of the glacier under me and went on this cruise.
Yeah. His other senses must be very heightened.
Yeah.
Because he can sense a lot of things. He also talked about going from an enclosed space, like in a forest, to an open space and experiencing things like wind or, I keep thinking of noises, but no, like a light breeze or the change in temperature.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that's what he focuses on. And when you lose one sense, you become really good at another sense, right? So people who are deaf are very, very focused on the way things look because that's all the information they have. So he's deaf and blind. So he's really, really focused on the way things feel, which makes sense. And then probably, I bet his taste buds are on point.
Oh my God, yeah. He does talk about his smell, sense of smell. Talking about going through the marketplace and the meat and spices. And
So if you ever feel like you're not prepared to go to a place, just think about this guy who's blind and deaf.
Exactly. And I think we could learn a lot from him trying to experience more from all five senses instead of, I think a lot of times you're focused, at least I feel for myself, I'm focused a little bit more on just my sight when I could be paying a bit more attention to other things.
Yeah.
I guess I pay attention to hearing as well. Different languages or different maybe ringing of bells or something like that. But really being in tune with your body, I think, would be a much more holistic way of experiencing a new place.
Yeah, I love that. I remember when I went to Taiwan a few years ago, I was just talking to somebody about this. I felt like the smells are so much different from anywhere else I've ever been. Mm. And I usually don't notice smells, but it was just really strong. Mm. All the street food was just so different. And you go into a little hole-in-the-wall restaurant and it's not a bad smell. It's just mm-hmm. something that is very, very foreign to me. And I've never had that experience anywhere else.
Yeah. I think actually when I do focus on smell, it's because there's a negative smell.
Yeah.
For example, I really don't like the smell of fish or seafood. Well, disclaimer, I'm a vegetarian, so don't like send me hate mail because I say that. But I really don't like the smell. So if I'm in a port or by the sea, I sometimes am like, ugh, gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people who even eat fish don't like the smell of fish.
It's a very strong smell.
Mm-hmm.
Or you smell like sewage or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's not super pleasant.
Yeah, it really taints your experience when you smell sewage.
Yeah, but I don't know, trying to just like more subtle smells, be in tune with them would be something mm-hmm. good, I think.
Yeah, smells. I'm going to focus on that this week and report back.
Sounds good. I'll try to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So we've talked about someone who has some disabilities when it comes to difficulty of travel. And today we're going to be focusing on going to a place where you don't speak the language, whether that be traveling or living. And we'll talk about some of the challenges of doing that,
mm-hmm.
as well as some tips for traveling or living in a different country,
mm-hmm.
and why it's so beneficial.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. So Patrice, you want to go ahead and start talking about some challenges?
Yeah, well, as I established last week, I'm in China, so I don't know what I'm doing anywhere. So I came up with plenty of challenges in brainstorming for this week.
Mm-hmm.
I think something that everybody could relate to that you wouldn't really think of until you get there is using local apps or websites that are convenient maybe for the population, but not for you.
Yeah.
So if you're visiting a place, if you're trying to get information about something there, and there might not be as much infrastructure for whatever language you speak,
mm-hmm.
that can be really challenging. Trying to find information about this place. Visiting places in Asia in general, whenever you're trying to find information about things, especially like local knowledge,
mm-hmm.
Basically my life depends on forums, because any kind of official websites in Thailand or Korea or China are just not going to be translated into English. And if they are, they mm-hmm. probably won't be updated.
Yeah. Do you have any examples from China?
Yes. When you're living in a place, I have an app on my phone that I'm supposed to pay my rent with, and it's in Chinese. And I have no idea where the pay rent button is.
So how does that work? It's like it's just an app for paying rent and that's it?
You can do a lot with it. You can request a service. You can say, oh, I'm having trouble with blah, 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 and somebody will come out and fix it for you. You can request a cleaning. I think I'm getting like discount messages, but I wouldn't know. I can't copy and paste them to translate them. It's like a picture that I get, so that's not helpful.
Yeah, and you mentioned this one, but it wasn't something I had really thought of. I'm thinking about living in Korea, and something as simple as banking or something like that. Trying to use the online banking was also impossible.
Oh, yeah. So actually, we should mention we were in Korea at the same time.
Yeah.
And we did meet up in Korea. I did find some pictures of that. So we'll have to post them on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there from 2012 to 2014, and Rachel was... You were there...
2013.
Oh, okay.
2013, okay. Fall semester.
Oh, I didn't realize you got a bank account mm-hmm. in Korea.
Yeah, everybody got a bank account in my program.
Wow. Oh, that's nice. They set it up for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was kind of a pain, but at least they spoke English because it was at the university.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
My local bank did not speak English.
So another thing that we thought is a challenge is finding medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually have a lot of experience with this, trying to find medicine.
Yeah, this is kind of your area of expertise, so I'm going to let you drive for a minute.
Yeah, I was really sick all through college, and to my mother's horror, I decided to study abroad twice during that time. When you're finding medicine, usually you'll find that a pharmacist will speak English. When I was in Korea, my now husband, Seth, I think he had food poisoning, or maybe he had some kind of flu. And so I went to the pharmacy to get some medicine for him. And on my way to the pharmacy, I actually translated the message that I wanted to say into Korean, so I was ready to talk to the pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And I get there, and I say in Korean, so, I don't know, he has a runny nose and a fever, and he's vomiting, and so what do you think he should take? And I said that, I looked at the pharmacist, and he repeated the message back to me in English. So that was a pleasant surprise, but a little disappointing.
Right, you worked so hard for that.
I know, I did. There was so much anxiety leading up to that moment.
Yeah, I found that in Spain as well, even though I speak Spanish, sometimes when you're in a situation where you need some kind of medical attention or you need to go to the doctor or something like that, it's really helpful if someone can speak your native language, although mm-hmm. that's not always possible.
Yeah.
I know when I was having to go to some doctors, and there were quite a few specialists or general care doctors who spoke English. Now, to what degree, we don't really know. But I know the doctor that I did go to, he was not a specialist. He was not listed as one of the English-speaking doctors, but he did speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that maybe seems really scary, but I think you always have to remember that in whatever English-speaking country, it's not the only proper medical care that you can receive. And yeah. while it is a little bit more difficult to navigate that, there are usually people who speak English, or mm-hmm. you can get an interpreter or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you make a good point. Just because you get sick in the U.S. and you get treated a certain way doesn't mean that people in other countries die because they don't get treated the same way you do in the U.S. People get sick all over the world, and right. there are competent doctors and nurses and pharmacists all over the world who take care of people and help them get better too.
Yeah. So if you're traveling, hopefully you're not going to need this advice, but mm-hmm. in case that you do, it should be something that you can manage. It's not mm-hmm. impossible.
Yeah, exactly. Finding stores. Stores look different in different places.
Moving to Spain, I had to spend a lot of time just finding things that, I don't know, in the US you would find all in one place, like either at the mm-hmm. grocery store or Target, Walmart, something like that. And instead, I have to think of like what type of store would that be in. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's gonna be in a paper store. Then I have to find a paper store.
Right.
Still I struggle a little bit. Like the other day I wanted to buy yarn. And I said, okay, I know I can find yarn at like one of the Chinese stores. But they're usually more expensive, so I was thinking, okay, maybe a fabric store, but I don't know if that's going to be exclusively, like, fabric, or if they're going to sell yarn as well. In the end, yeah. I didn't find out the answer, so if anyone has the answer, let me know.
Still looking. That's funny. Yeah, Here they're actually Walmarts, which and Carrefours, and which is basically the Walmart of Europe. It's French. But I haven't really found like the markets here yet. I think the next one is really good. I can even think of some stuff in Spain, getting around and reading mm-hmm. signs.
And this could be language, and this could also be just what you're expecting. Like, for me, coming to Spain and finding street signs is a little bit difficult, because they're, in the US, they're usually a sign that stands on the ground and
bright green.
Yeah. And you say, oh, okay, this is Main Street or whatever. But no, usually they're little tiles that are placed on a building that's pretty high up, and you have to look. And they're not on every corner, so you have to look around and say, okay, I don't see it on any of these four corners where I am, so let me walk down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a Where's Waldo of street signs sometimes in Spain.
I mean, they're pretty. Usually they have like a painting or some kind of depiction of the namesake of the street, but it's a little bit more complicated, especially if you're used to seeing it in a different place.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I had a friend visiting me in Barcelona, and before he got there, we were together in the U.S., and we sat down and I showed him where to look for street signs to get to my apartment, because it is really hard. If you don't know where they are, then it's going to take you a while to find them.
You're like, why are none of these streets labeled? I don't understand.
Well, that's easier than in Asia, where there are no street signs.
Good point.
So, yeah, I'm sure you remember in Korea, to get somewhere in a cab, you never tell them the address. Right. Places have addresses, but they're not for going to the place. It's for delivering mail or packages to the place. When I lived in Gwangju, South Korea, I would tell the cab driver to drop me off at the Catholic church in the neighborhood where I lived. Because I lived near the Catholic church, and apparently there was only one for neighborhood, and they knew where it was.
Okay. Yeah, I remember trying to get places in Korea, or trying to describe places to people, like, oh, you know that restaurant? I don't know the name of it, but it's on that street, behind that street with that other restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's
maybe
like two blocks down, and it has like an orange sign. Do you know that place?
Great. And did they know that place?
Usually, no. Or maybe they would think they did, and then it would turn out we were actually talking about very different places.
Were you communicating that in Korean? Because that's pretty good.
No. No, my Korean's not that good.
And it's like, man, Rachel, you really talked yourself down last episode.
No, this was like mostly talking to other exchange students, and we all lived in the same area, so people knew more or less the same places, but still, it was hard to describe where they were.
Yeah, I don't know my address here, but I definitely just tell the cab driver the metro stop where I am. And I am studying some Chinese, but when he asks me, you know, should I go this way? I'm just like, I just repeat myself, this metro stop? Or he might be saying, like, it'll be faster to go through this neighborhood or something. And I'm just like, Lianhua Bay?
That's a classic. Yeah. Just repeat yourself and until you understood. Just one word.
If it's not working, just keep saying it over and over. Eventually, somebody will have to make something out of it.
Hopefully it's what you want it to be.
Yeah. Yep. So.
And the other thing about getting around is, I think people get very nervous about reading signs in airports or reading signs in bus stations, things like that. I don't know about what you think, but from my experience, usually it's, especially if it's written in an alphabet other than the Latin alphabet, it's usually also written in the Latin alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in bigger cities.
Yeah. In Korea, it was usually written in Korean and in the phonetic Latin spelling of it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's especially difficult too for me when I've gone places that don't have the same alphabet. It's like an mm-hmm. added layer that you have to, if it's phonetic, you can maybe learn how to pronounce it and kind of sound words out. Like Cyrillic is not that hard to learn. And then you mm-hmm. can sound things out and say like, oh, okay, I can more or less understand what that says.
Did you go to Russia?
Yeah. I went on a choir tour in Russia and we went to Moscow. We didn't go to St. Petersburg, but we went to Perm and to Yekaterinburg. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also some places, I think, in the Balkans where they use Cyrillic.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Alphabet.
Yeah, I've studied Cyrillic before, too. It takes, like, a day. I think the hardest part of Cyrillic is changing your mind. Like, this looks like an N, but it's an R.
Yeah, it's not that hard. If you can sound it out, then that can help you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to read Arabic, for instance, yeah. So...
It's really hard.
Yeah, I have no idea what it says.
Yeah.
So in that instance, I'm a little bit more lost.
Yeah.
One more. Ordering food. As maybe I mentioned before, I'm a vegetarian. And while ordering food is difficult and you want to learn some basic words like please, thank you, like basic dishes maybe of the country that you're traveling in or living in, it adds another level of complexity, mm-hmm. I think, when you have some type of diet restriction.
It's hard in places where they don't even have a concept for people who have a different preference for food, because everybody kind yeah. of eats the same thing, I would imagine. I bet you had a lot of trouble in Korea, even with kimchi, which has oyster sauce in it.
Yeah, Korea was one of the more difficult places I've been. I was actually talking to a friend who's living there now. Today, and I was saying, are you still like vegetarian? Or she's like, oh no, pescatarian. And
yeah, yeah,
that was something I had to kind of just be okay with, was okay, I'm gonna like mess up and I'm gonna eat things that I don't know necessarily what's yeah. in them, and I can, as right. much as I ask, like, does this have meat in it, I'm gonna get like an answer that's no. And then this happened to me, actually. It was one of my first weeks there, and I only knew like one word for meat, and so I went to a restaurant and I said, like, does this have meat in it? And she was like, no. And I was like, okay, all right, great, I'll have that. And it was mm-hmm. a rice, but the meat that was not in it was actually tiny bits of ham throughout the entire rice dish.
Yeah.
So it was just like picking out little bits of ham.
With your chopsticks.
Yeah. And I would never do that in the United States, like, or a place where I had a better grasp of the language, but mm-hmm. There was no way to like communicate that, or so just being a little bit more flexible.
Right. Well, that's one of the advantages of moving abroad or yeah. going abroad, is you are forced to become more flexible.
Definitely.
Although it can be a pain when you're a vegetarian and you find a million tiny bits of ham in your rice. And you had just gotten there, so those metal chopsticks are kind of hard to use at the beginning.
So. Yeah. And it wasn't something... like a huge piece of ham that I could just remove.
Right.
It was literally like 200, and I was there for like 2 hours.
You're probably hungry.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some tips that we thought of for when you're traveling or living in a country where you don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, first Number one, it's probably going to help you unless you don't have coverage in a place, which shout out to T-Mobile. T-Mobile works all over the world. download a translation app. Things are getting better and better as far as being able to communicate. So that makes a huge difference, being able to to talk to somebody. And
yeah, it makes it way more immediate. Even if it's not perfect, at least you have probably the basic idea that you can get across, which is awesome. Exactly.
Yeah, the other day I was in a little store at an art market, and this woman was trying to talk to me. So she had a translation app on her phone, and she just talked into it, and it talked to me. And then I spoke into my translation app, which talked to her. And so it was a short conversation because it was kind of a pain, and we were trying to, like, shop. But it would just be like, blah, 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 blah. I am happy to have you here.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, and she probably got the same kind of thing from me, right? Like, we love your store, something like that.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, a particular app that you use?
Yeah, I use Google Translate here.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Also, another important thing is body language, especially if you don't speak anything or you have just a really small amount. You can point at something. Mm-hmm. If it's a menu, just like, especially if there's pictures, I guess that helps. But maybe you know a couple things that you just kind of point, or you're trying to get directions and you look point at the map, or
and also don't be afraid to look stupid using body language, because people aren't gonna think, oh wow, that person looks really stupid doing that. they'll probably,
and even if they do, who cares?
Exactly, you're not gonna see them again. So, and if you do, then they'll be like, hey, there's that crazy foreigner who did that weird thing with their body that I didn't understand. Wow, worst case scenario.
At least you're trying. Also, just knowing, like, a few words, especially courtesy words, thank you, please, how are you, hello, goodbye.
Right, right. Definitely. Thank you and hello are the two words that you should master before you go anywhere. Watch some YouTube videos, get your mouth around it, and make sure you you're ready to say that at any time, because you're going to need it, especially when somebody's helping you figure out what you're doing.
Oh, I'm sorry, too.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Sometimes I've gone somewhere and I forgot to learn I'm sorry, and then I'm just like, sorry.
Yeah.
And I think, like, ugh, like, I should have learned that, because that I'm gonna say all the time. People get so happy and so appreciative if you just make this a small effort. You don't have to be fluent. Just try to learn a few words and use them whenever you can.
Yeah.
And it's going to really change, I think, the way that people perceive you and how people treat you as well.
Oh, definitely. If you've read Trevor Noah's book, it's amazing. One of my favorite things that he says in that book is he talks about how you can fool racism if you can sound like the native speakers.
Yeah.
So if you can say something to them in the language that they understand, then that automatically brings you to be somebody that they can relate to.
Yeah. And
you give them something to hold on to when you can do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's one reason I'm just so fascinated by language, is the psychological effects that it has on people when you can speak their languages.
Yeah, totally. I hadn't really thought of it in that way, but that's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this one that you have, Rachel, put keep in writing your important addresses and landmarks that you're going to, so you can show them to taxi drivers or people on the street.
Yeah, it's important if you can write them down, because if it's a language you don't speak, you might really butcher and not get what you're looking for at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think if you're gonna use English, that is at this point in time, kind of the universal language, I guess. If you're a native speaker, really don't do the thing where you speak really loudly and just like keep saying the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Even if someone speaks English, don't assume that they have the same level as you.
Mm-hmm.
Try to use more simplistic vocabulary, grammar mm-hmm. structures.
Yeah.
Just like the bare minimum that they can help you or mm-hmm. you can make your whatever you're trying to say be known.
Right. Make sure you speak really slowly and try to use the smallest words you can think of to describe something.
Yeah. And that can be really hard for native speakers to mm-hmm. realize, I guess, like when you're using something that's too advanced. And yeah. just to try and make it easier.
Yeah. And I mean, I experienced that also in reverse in Korea, because people aren't used to, people don't learn foreign languages there usually. People don't even learn English. And right. they'll say something to me and it'll be really fast and with words I don't understand. Whereas I've gotten good at putting my English into a very basic form of English. Koreans were not good at putting their Korean into basic Korean.
Okay.
Did you experience that too?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, I barely understand colors. Just help me out a little.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Smile and don't take yourself too seriously. I am a big advocate of this.
Yeah, that goes a long way. if you're just trying to be perfect, that's going to be hard for you. You're probably going to mess up, but
mm-hmm.
what does it really matter? You're yeah. there to learn or to have a good time, see something new. So it's all part of the experience.
Mm-hmm. Then when you have a moment where you don't communicate successfully, you can just send it in to the podcast. Let us know how
yes.
it went. Yeah.
And smiling. Smiling is key in every situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Download Google Maps before you leave for the place where you are going. It still works mm-hmm. with GPS. I did this recently in the Dominican Republic, and mm-hmm. it was very helpful.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know that you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of people, and they're like, no, you can't. And I'm like, no, the GPS still works even if you don't have service.
Mm-hmm.
The one downside with that is I have had it, like, crap out, and then yeah. I'm left with no map.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a backup as of a paper map.
Right? Oh, yeah, definitely. Go to the tourist office and get a local map. They're usually free there, or a yeah. dollar or two. So it's definitely worth the investment.
And if your phone dies, then you're just left without a map too. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the most important thing is really to just have a positive attitude and an open mind. That's really the way that you're going to learn a lot about the place that you're in, as well as yourself.
Okay. Well, you want to go to the benefits of being in a place where you don't know the language?
Sounds good.
So, number one, this is just something that I've noticed that I love about being abroad in a place where I don't understand everything that's going on around me. I love that life is more complicated, yes, but it's also simpler. And you're kind of forced to focus on the things that you can control. Do you find that in Spain?
Yeah, I love that point that you make about the things that you can control. And a lot of times they're not as many as in your home country.
Right.
Or I think it also, more than just what you can control, it's also about feeling satisfaction for like really small things. It's like, woo, mm-hmm. I went to the pharmacy.
Yeah. Or,
I went to the grocery store successfully.
Mm-hmm. I got breakfast today.
Yeah, and it really puts a lot of it gives you a sense of satisfaction and success
mm-hmm.
really simple things.
Yeah, when you're abroad the number of things that you can control shrinks a lot, and then you're forced to, like you said, appreciate the small moments and let go of the urge to control everything when you know it can't happen.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said like your brain is always functioning at a higher level
mm-hmm.
and you have to take all the information that's new around you and deduct what is happening. And that's mm-hmm. so true. Mm-hmm. What's happened? Why is everyone like standing up and going outside? Oh,
there must be a festival going on or a protest or.
I think that's exactly right. It's a lot of very quick information that you have to process and try to figure it out.
Yeah. The other day I was at work and all of my students get up and they have their little kerchiefs out and they're putting them over their face. And I was like, what is happening? And I've been there for a month and I've never seen this before. And I actually do have a co-teacher in that class. And I look at her and I'm like, what are they doing? And she goes, it's a rehearsal for fire? And I was like, oh, it's a fire drill. And and it was actually like a very realistic fire drill. Like they had fire sirens going and okay. the kids were all covering their faces and ducking down and running out of the building.
Oh, wow.
In an orderly fashion. But I actually took pictures and wrote a blog post about that on languagenerds2earth.com. So that's if fun. You want to go read it, you can see pictures of this. But yeah, I mean, now I know if the kids are all putting kerchiefs over their mouth, there might be a fire in the building.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One thing that I just remembered that was super weird, probably for the first year that I lived in Spain, uh-huh. I would sometimes randomly hear this kind of high music, and it would be traveling down the street. And I was always like, what the hell is that sound? And mm-hmm. it would be like once a month, once every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And you could hear it like getting closer and then going away. And it's like a little cart. I would see it, but I had no idea mm-hmm. what it was. And so one day it happened when I was in class and I asked my students, I was like, what is that sound? And they're like, oh, that's the knife sharpener.
What?
He walks down the street. People hear the music and they come out to get their knives sharpened.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. It's like,
I couldn't believe it was a real thing, actually.
It's like an ice cream man, but for knives.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. Maybe you can record that next time you hear it going by.
Oh, yeah. I hope to hear it sometime soon then.
Yeah. Experience your city by sound.
Yeah.
Number three, this one is so important to me. I think as a social animal, the bonds you get out of going to or living in an environment where you don't speak the language are so, so strong. Hmm. The friends you make in these places, just because you have a common goal and you're working as a team. Also, if you're on a vacation with your partner in a place where you don't know the language, you have to work together to get through it. Kind of like I think of all my friends from Korea as war buddies sometimes.
Yeah, that's so true. You're both lost together and trying mm-hmm. to figure it all out and
commiserating on the difficulties.
Yeah, I think just that sharing of experience too. You then feel like, okay, I'm not the only one that this is weird for or that this has happened to, and other people having like a similar experience, I think right. that helps you. It's a little easier to adjust or to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what brings you closer together too.
Yeah, so. I love that point. Mm-hmm. Number four, it gives you a new perspective on your own country and culture. So mm-hmm. maybe you've always lived in a certain country and things, let's say just something as simple as going to the grocery store. The grocery stores are like this and you think, okay, that's the only way it could possibly be.
Yeah.
But then if you go to another country, you see like, oh, for instance, like people buy their bread at one store, their meat mm-hmm. at another store, their vegetables and fruit at another store, and I guess other things at the main grocery store.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think you made a point earlier when we were talking about pharmacies that this is another way you realize that just because you're used to things being a certain way doesn't mean that they always have to be that way. And actually, people function really well. You might find that you like somebody else's system better in that way. I think that's one reason why people who live abroad, like me, have trouble reacclimating to their home country. Like, the longer you're abroad, the harder it is to go back. The stronger the reverse culture shock is, because you might find, you know what, this is really convenient for me being in this new place, and I kind of like that better now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you get used to things in a different way, and I think it also helps you learn about what you value. Maybe if you've never experienced something different, you don't really question, it could be done this way. When you can compare, I think, multiple ways of doing something, you can kind of see, like, which things are important, which things don't really matter one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much all we have for travel tips or benefits and challenges of living or traveling in a country where you don't speak the language. So now it's time for our Lost in Translation.
So we had a submission for Lost in Translation moment, and I love it.
This is my first time hearing it, so I'm excited.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to read it. Great podcast, ladies. I'm glad to hear more about the Inuit culture, having been up there myself, but I've got a Lost in Translation story. I was in Belgium for a summer to do my field school. My girlfriend at the time had lost a favorite hat of hers, and I wanted to try and find a replacement for her while I was in Europe. So the hat, which I now know as a newsboy hat, wasn't really something that floated around in my day-to-day vocabulary. So while I was out looking for it, I didn't know what to call it, and I did my best to describe it. I walked into a souvenir shop, which was my first mistake, and I'm trying to use what little French I have to ask for a chapeau that looks like a muffin? The clerk looked me dead in the eye and said, "We don't sell muffins here." All I could do was turn around and walk away really fast. Keep up the great stuff.
Did he respond in English or in French?
In English.
Somehow that's even funnier.
Yeah, it's like... You know newsboy hats? I looked it up. So it's kind of like poofy on the top, and then it has a bill.
Oh, yeah.
In the front. So think of like 1920s kids that are selling newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
We don't sell muffins here.
Oh, my God. And it's so funny. It's so funny to me that he did such a good job trying to describe it.
Yeah.
I would have just, like, found a picture and been like, this? Do you have this?
Right. Yeah, maybe that was before smartphones. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I wonder if he ever did find the muffin hat.
Oh, I love that story.
That's a good one.
All right. Well, thank you to our listener for sending that in. All right. So that wraps up episode 2. You can find us on our website at languagenerdsdoearth.com or on Facebook by the same name. Instagram, language_nerds_do_earth. That's it, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On Instagram, we try to put out some language news every week, as well as we'll be putting up some pictures of cultural stuff that we see in our day-to-day lives. And then you're also welcome to send in a Lost in Translation story. You can do that under the contact section on our website, or you could send us a voice memo, languagenerdsdoearth@gmail.com.
Yes, we would love to hear from you and hear your Lost in Translation moments.
Yes, looking forward to it tremendously. Thank you again for sending in that Lost in Translation story. It was beautiful.
Yes. All right. And thank you so much for joining us. And mm-hmm. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Have a good one.
All right. Bye.